Great. So you've read the book?
Yes, I have. Yep.
Awesome.
Read it, took notes.
I mean, if you had said no, I don't know what we would have done. I probably would have just, we could have faked our way through it.
Tell me what happened, then ask me how I think I would have reacted.
Right, right. Tell me how this makes you feel. A bunch of bears find a dinosaur.
But it's not really a dinosaur.
it gets a lot more complicated than that for no real reason.
Exactly. I legit had so many thoughts during this book. Like, I have so many thoughts. I have a lot of legal considerations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was just a lot. At one point, I'm like, yeah, reputational risk. Let's talk about that, bears.
Well, you're lucky because this is a book that brings up the law in the very end, and it's another one of those, like, were the Berenstains themselves familiar with how the law works? Because I don't think we'll get into this, but in Bear Country, there doesn't seem to be any laws against attempted anything.
Right. Like, we didn't get to that attempted fraud one, and we're working on attempted murder first.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are covering a topic that is near and dear to my heart, fraud. No, I mean dinosaurs, and the little kids' involvement with dinosaurs, the love of dinosaurs, the discovery of dinosaurs, and again, the fraud involved in the discovery of dinosaurs. The history of paleontology is rife with fraud. The history of any time that something becomes popular in the public imagination, there are people who want to capitalize on it, people who want to monetize it, and people who want to get away with not doing the actual work. But the bears involved in the fraud involved in this certain paleontological plot line actually put in a lot more work perpetrating fraud than I would think it would actually be to actually discover a dinosaur. It gets very, very complicated. This is another one of our wonderful Ralph Ripoff books. It's another one of our wonderful Ralph Ripoff scheme books. And the title of this book is The Berenstain Bears and the G-Rex Bones from 1999. It covers fraud and dinosaurs and Ralph Ripoff. And to help me puzzle out the doings of this book, I have one half of the Over the Tabletop podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Aaron Ayers. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Phil. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you on the show. So right off the bat, just before we talk about anything else, was this a strange book?
It was very strange. And I have to say that I have a fair amount of familiarity with the Berenstain Bears.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. I mean, I was a member in the early 80s of the Random House, like, Book of the Month Club.
Oh.
So they would send, like, picture books, and a lot of the books that they would send were the Berenstain Bears books. So I had a fair number of those, and I have fond memories of like the Berenstain Bears Go to School. So I grew up reading them. I watched the show a little bit with my nieces, and I think the chapter books began occurring like well after my time. I was mostly familiar with the picture books, but did have pretty fond memories of them. Like,
yeah, I would say if you weren't like 10 to 12 years old in the early to mid 90s, the chapter books probably just went right over your head. Like, they were aimed at a very specific, very narrow market at the time.
Yeah, and I was in high school in the the early 90s.
So was I. I was not apt to pick a Berenstain Bears book off the shelf at that point.
Right, right.
Not even ironically.
But I did have younger sisters, and then later on I had my nieces. So the Berenstain Bears were always something that were kind of in my world and made me think, like, yeah, these are, you know, they're telling good stories, they're good for kids. And I was actually really interested in reading a chapter book because I have a 5-year-old niece who's, like, impossibly precocious and reads everything.
Yeah.
And so I thought, oh, maybe these would be good for her. And then I read this and thought, like, well, she does love dinosaurs. I don't know how she feels about fraud.
About fraud. About hucksters. About swindlers.
Plaid jackets and spats. Does she like those? Probably. Now, she's a weird kid.
You said that you had watched the Saturday morning cartoon back in the 80s. Do you remember the character of Ralph from that at all?
No, I primarily remember the main bear family. And like their teachers and the bullies like Queenie and Too Tall. I do remember them.
Yeah.
But for the most part, no, the side characters, like I was really focused on the family. The one thing, is there a baby bear or something?
Honey came along, she came along in the early 2000s. So this is all before, this is all pre-Honey Bear. Yeah.
Okay. Because they're the one that, the book that I really, really loved, the Berenstain Bears and the Spooky Old Tree,
mm-hmm.
there's three bears for some reason.
That book is wildly outside of continuity.
Okay.
We don't understand where that book is coming from. I covered that book probably almost 3 years ago at this point. And even at that time, I was like, I don't know who these cubs are. They don't ever name them. I believe Spooky Old Tree actually came out before Sister Bear was even added to the cast.
Yeah. And it was something that I read, like, you know, familiar with it. And I'm like, all right, well, this is plausibly brother. This is plausibly sister. But who's, is this like the Tuffy of the Berenstain world? Like, I was very confused at the time. Yeah. And it Spooky even bothered
old,
me.
Spooky Old Tree, not canon, unfortunately. exists in a side universe that we haven't dipped into in quite some time.
Spooky trees aren't the image that the Berenstain Bears really want to present.
Not at this point in the bear world. Instead, it's a world of crime, criminals, and people taking advantage of gullible townsfolk. We are deep. This book gets us right into the action. So why don't you tell us what happens, Aaron? Why don't you tell us what happens in the Berenstain Bears and the G-Rex Bones?
Okay, I would be delighted to. We open on a typical day, apparently, for Ralph Ripoff, Beartown's small-time crook and swindler. And as I hadn't encountered him before, I thought, like, okay, Beartown has its seedier side. I'm down to learn about this. And, you know, he has a visitor who looks, familiar but also threatening, and it is someone called Zoltan Bearish.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There are a few bear puns for names in this book. I don't know if this is meant to be a pun for anything, but he is Dr. Zoltan Bearish.
I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out if Zoltan Bearish is supposed to bring to mind anyone. I don't know any Zoltans in literature except Zoltan Kaparthy, who is the guy who tries to call out Eliza Doolittle in My Fair Lady. That's the only Zoltan I know. I think that the wishing machine from Big, was that called Zoltan?
Yep, it was, or Zoltar, Zoltan.
Is that Zoltar?
One of those.
The
only thing that he brought to mind for me, both in the illustrations and the fact that, like, the mention of, like, his piercing gaze is brought up, and the hypnotizing, like, honestly, he brought up, like, Bear Rasputin for me.
Oh.
So I didn't know, but, well, and I guess even that sort of fits with the doctor of chemistry. And his comment, he makes a comment, like, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm a doctor of chemistry. I think medical doctors use chemistry.
Yeah.
this book has a real tenuous grasp on science in general.
Oh, it definitely does.
But, you know, so Dr. Bearish is vaguely hypnotizing to Ralph Ripoff, and he comes in and lets him know, like, I used to work at the Bearsonian Institution, and because of course he did, mm-hmm. and he was their chemist, and he had an argument with the head of the Bearsonian Institution, a bear named Actual Factual, who, based on his depiction and his description in the book, appears to not be a great scientist and dresses dresses like a folk singer.
Now, Actual Factual is the smartest bear in Bear Country. He single-handedly runs the entire Bearsonia Museum. He is Bear Country's only scientist, and he's been part of the Bear Country world since the late 70s, at least. He was part of the Bear Country Science Almanacs that the Berenstains put out. But yeah, he is your educational bear. He is the resident scientist that the cubs turn to whenever they have any kind of question about science. And he doesn't know how to run a business, and he is extremely gullible.
Right. And there's this big, this big emphasis on, like, whether skepticism is a necessary part of science, but Actual Factual is just kind of like, nope, not for me. I'm excited. Yeah. I just want these dinosaur bones. But we will get to that.
Excitement is my science, he said. Exactly. Or he may as well say.
I just wanted to believe, said very few scientists ever.
So this Dr. Barish, he was fired from the Bearsonian Institute.
He was. Like, purportedly for allowing fruit flies to eat Actual Factual's apple lunch.
Yep, not what fruit flies do, but
yep. They do not. They were like these little piranha fruit flies.
Right, they do not eat apples. That's
not their thing.
Yep.
So Dr. Barish wants to get, as he calls it, justice for having been fired, and Ralph Ripoff more accurately describes it as revenge. And Ralph Ripoff is still down with this revenge.
Right, because money stands to be earned from this particular revenge.
Right.
And will you please tell our listeners the amazingly straightforward plan they have?
Totally. It's so easy and well thought out that Ralph Ripoff immediately catches on to it. Dr. Barish has spent all of these intervening years developing chemically perfect, like, dinosaur bones.
Yes.
You know, they would be carbon dated, or carbon dated.
Yeah.
and would appear to be actual dinosaur bones. And he has created science perfect fake fossils with which he wants to trick Actual Factual into buying. And I don't get the sense that Dr. Barish really even, like, he doesn't necessarily care about the money. He just cares about putting one over on Actual Factual so that he can then come back a year later and prove that the bones are not in fact real.
Now, this is one of those swindles, one of those crimes that exists in fiction where the thing that you have invented in order to pull off the crime could be used to make a lot of money by itself without pulling off a crime. Like, Dr. Barish actually stands to be a more famous scientist than Actual Factual because he has somehow replicated, like, this chemically replicated fossils, and he's obviously a brilliant chemist. I don't understand why he's going to waste his time, blow a year before he even reveals this amazing discovery he's made.
Right, because, like, he spent 5 years developing this. You'd think in that time he would have been like, yeah, no, this is actually my destiny is to, you know, is these chemical experiments, not making a fake dinosaur right. skeleton and selling it to the Bearsonian Institution.
Because he's going to sell, it's not just any dinosaur skeleton either, because Actual Factual has been wanting to get a T-Rex skeleton in there. But what is Dr. Barish going to sell him?
Barish is going to sell him an even bigger dinosaur than the T-Rex, which, I mean, technically, I think there were actually a lot of dinosaurs that were bigger than T-Rex, but it's twice the size and an undiscovered species. So essentially, he is inventing a new species of dinosaur. So he is Jurassic Worlding all over the place, but only in skeleton form.
Now, here's my thing. He says they're bones of a similar but as yet undiscovered species, twice the size of a T-Rex, blah, blah, blah. I figure this skeleton will bring in at least five times as much money as a T-Rex skeleton. And to which I'm like, if this thing brings in five times the amount of money that Actual Factual could hope for, and then you give him a year to enjoy the fruits of these labors, when it gets revealed that he was duped, all that's going to happen is you'll go to jail for fraud, and Actual Factual will have all this money he made.
Right. Like, he's not the, like, I mean, Ralph Ripoff, like, I don't think he has an ethical dilemma at all, but he's very surprised by this, because Actual Factual is, you know, even for Ralph Ripoff, the swindler of Beartown, he still has an impeccable reputation.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know that, so, yeah, like, he'll get the money back, like, he'll probably be okay, like, he isn't going to be... Actual Factual isn't going to be that harmed, but the book makes it clear. The book wants us to think, like, his reputation will be stained forever.
Right.
And in my head, I said it will be Baron stained forever.
Yeah.
Because of course I did. So I guess, like, you know, that's how he frames it. Like, the professor is going to be humiliated because of this. I don't really think, again, that's how the scientific community works. You know,
right. Like, scientists make mistakes. Like,
right.
That's part of science.
Right. And as we see later on in the book, the bones aren't super well peer reviewed. So.
No. Like, this book treats scientific discovery like something you found in a room.
Right.
Yeah, the upcoming archaeological dig, the paleontological dig, is not conducted by scientists or paleontologists or interns or anything. It is conducted by swamp dwelling hillbillies. So, but we'll get to that.
Yes, definitely.
I do want to talk about the graphical depiction of revenge versus justice really quick.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
They illustrate that with a devil for revenge and the blind scales of justice for justice. And if I ever got a tattoo from the Berenstain Bears, it would be of revenge versus justice.
They seem to be, like, sort of mixing their justice imagery with their, you know, angel and devil sort of imagery. But I do appreciate it, particularly because revenge looks so fun. Like, he's cheery. He's about to take a poke at justice. like, he's got, like, a sassy cape on. Mm-hmm. And revenge, I don't know, revenge just looks more fun than justice.
Yeah, I'd get one on each bicep.
Yeah, exactly. And Ralph Ripoff is down for whatever they're calling it. There are some really interesting sort of, like, I don't know, commentary about who Ralph Ripoff is as a bear in this.
Very much so.
Like, so there's some philosophy intermingled in here too. Which raised a few questions for me. Like, he had the, you know, the comment about destroying the quote was, destroying the hard-earned reputation of a good and kind bear was different. A bear's reputation was worth more than any amount of money. So I don't know if this is, like, an actual, like, a honor among thieves sort of thing. Like, for Ralph, like, he explains, like, oh, I'll take money from the bears,
yes,
but it's not personal. I don't want this specific person's money. I just want money.
Right.
But then I did have the question, like, you know, could Actual Factual sue for damages relative to reputational risk, even if, you know, and like, we're getting, I'm getting ahead of us a little bit in terms of this, but, like, Ralph Ripoff has, like, thought extensively about that year that they're going to keep this secret for.
Yeah, so this is a great example of, okay, so there's the Berenstain Bears big chapter books, which we're reading. Mm-hmm. There's also the Berenstain Bears Scouts chapter books, and they both have Ralph Ripoff in them throughout. And I've brought this up on numerous episodes, but this is a great example of the fact that Ralph Ripoff in the big chapter books is a very different Ralph Ripoff from the Ralph Ripoff in the Bear Scouts chapter books. In the Bear Scouts chapter books, he is a villain. He is conniving and scheming to, at times, overthrow Bear Country. He works with other villains a lot, does horrible things. In the last Bear Scouts book I covered, he actually, like, was working with the Weasels to, like, actually kill the Bear Scouts. Like, it was very Saturday morning villain type stuff. In the big chapter books, we have what you were just discussing, which is Ralph sort of fulfilling his role as the neighborhood swindler. It's nothing personal. This is my job. I have a role to fill in this society, and it is the thief. It is the con artist. And I actually have a lot of affection for the people in this town who've been very good to me by falling for my tricks. But I'm not a bad guy. I am just the swindler. And I've actually, like, gone out of my way to help out every once in a while because I don't actually want anyone to get hurt. And I like that this book opens up with Ralph having a moral dilemma about someone's rep, because that's permanent damage in his mind. Of course, he goes along with it anyway.
Right, because swindler's going to swindle. But,
right.
And I do have, and I do also appreciate his, like, his commitment to doing a good swindling job, too. Like,
yes.
he's researched the laws of Bear Country, which I do also have some questions about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he makes the comment of, like, a victim of fraud had to report the crime to the police within 1 year of the commission of the crime. And then, you know, if he didn't, the swindler couldn't be arrested and tried in a court of law for the crime ever.
Yes.
I am assuming that Bear Country law probably also harkens back to English common law.
Okay.
Which that is fair. Like, you know, there, I think, you know, dating back to the 1600s or so. Yeah, that, like, a year for a misdemeanor crime, which fraud typically is, is accurate. But, you know, they get into, he's going to make millions off of this. And I just really think that kicks it up into, like, felony theft.
Right. The amount of money we start talking about here is, I would say the feds would be involved.
Right. And I don't know. They mentioned they have to, you know, drive 50 miles to hide the bones to, you know, surprisingly, surreptitiously find them. I don't know if they've crossed state lines. I'm not as familiar with Bear Country geography as I might be. But, like, I also appreciate Ralph's commitment to, like swindling for him is almost poetic. You know, he says, and this is a lot of information for a children's book.
Yes.
It was called a statute of limitations.
Right. We get introduced to that concept.
Exactly. To Ralph Ripoff, statutes of limitations were the most beautiful words in all the world, laws in all the land.
And to an adult reader, that is the creepiest sentence in all the land.
It is super. It is super creepy, but it also gives me that sense that Ralph Ripoff appreciates being governed. He likes that he lives in a society that lets him skirt the laws.
Mm-hmm. Laws are important because that's the only way you can break them.
Exactly.
So we are only through chapter one.
I had a lot of thoughts about this.
No, listeners, the first two chapters of this book are jam-packed with this plot. Like, the book kind of clips along after this, but it is just setup after setup, because into chapter two, we meet a wholly new character to the Bears universe. We meet Sand Crab Jones, who we've never met, who lives out in the Great Grizzly Desert, where we've never been. And Sand Crab Jones is a prospector?
I guess. He's a hermit?
Uh-huh.
An apparently illiterate hermit, who I think maybe does odd jobs.
Yeah, and Ralph is going to trick him into burying the bones with the Bog Brothers' help. And he's going to swindle Sand Crab by saying that Sand Crab wants $200 for the job and then only giving Sand Crab 20 or 30 of the dollars for the job and then pocketing the rest. So swindles within swindles are happening now. Like, there are several layers now of swindle going on.
Right. He has a lot of swindle balls that he's juggling.
Yes. Ralph Ripoff's swindle balls coming soon to ABC television. So the Bog brothers and Sandcrab Jones get down to burying these wonderfully enormous, these huge fake fossils. But Sandcrab has a feeling that he is being watched.
Right.
And who is he being watched by?
Well, we find like that actually like sort of surprised me because I had just totally forgotten about the Berenstain Bears themselves. Like,
yeah, we are so into this book, and the bear cubs themselves haven't even appeared.
Exactly. Yeah, when they showed up, and as soon as they showed up, because they are on some sort of camping trip, and as soon as they they're actually out for a nature hike, and as soon as they show up, they just sort of annoy me.
No.
You know, like, oh, they've all been given compasses for a nature hike, but only a semi-nerd like Fred would bring a compass on a nature hike. No, everyone would, not just nerds.
Yeah, they're acting remarkably out of character in this book.
I thought that was the case because they just, like, you know, brother and sister are being kind of rude to their friends. They're lost, so I don't even know, like, why they're all kind of like, oh, well, why would we have a compass? Like, it, and
right.
Lizzie Bruin, who, I don't, they make a big, she is actually the one that spots everyone, that spots Sandcrab Jones and Ralph Ripoff, because she, you know, and they make a point of saying, like, Lizzie had the sharpest eyes. And I'm like, she's also holding binoculars and looking through them. So, like,
I'm glad they point out, though, you said that surely a semi-nerd like Fred would bring a compass on a nature hike. And I appreciate they point out that Fred is only a semi-nerd because Ferdy Factual makes an appearance in this book. And Ferdy Factual has now been established as the true nerd of Bear Country. So they have to now demote Fred to a semi-nerd because he's not quite as nerdy as Ferdy Factual.
Right, right. And I feel like they add that in just so later on Ferdy can be like, oh, I've got this, Fred. I'll explain the dinosaur science thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real battle of the nerds with those when those two are in the same book together. So what happens is they witness the Bog brothers doing their dastardly deeds.
Exactly. And they don't really, and they're not sure what's going to happen, but they do see Ralph Ripoff and know, like, oh, you know, he's probably going to rip someone off. So we'll see what happens. And by then then they manage not to die in the desert, which is probably just down to, like, luck in this, because they managed to
also
find their way.
It says Teacher Bob and Teacher Jane did eventually check the bus for the lost cubs. I'm like, who are these, like, what are the teachers doing that, like, five cubs wandered off and no one noticed, like, for however long they were missing?
Right. They were just like, just let them loose in the desert for a while. Okay, go ahead, kids. Meet back here. You know, like, or we'll find you.
Now here we get a wonderful listing of the TV stations that the bears all enjoy watching.
Right.
Papa and Mama want to watch the Bear News Network, BNN. Mm-hmm. Brother wants sports, BSPN, which I assume means Bear Sports. Wait.
Playing Network?
What does ESPN stand for? The Entertainment and Sports Programming Network. I guess that makes sense. Which means that this is the Bear and Sports Programming Network. Again, they are the only intelligent creatures in the country. Everything is bear-oriented. Like, that's it. Like, they don't have to name themselves as the focus.
Oh, and that reminded me of a significant question that I had from one of the first chapters regarding Ralph, because I'm really invested in Ralph.
Okay.
It's apparently, like, maybe the narrator that makes the comment of Ralph is thinking about potentially, you know, does he actually want to swindle? He isn't sure if he wants to swindle. And they make the comment of, you know, but bears, like most humans, frequently give in to selfish urges, or have the strong urge to do the selfish thing. And then I was like, wait, what? Are
there
humans?
There are not canonically humans in the Berenstain Bears universe.
I didn't think there were.
No, they do not exist in the Berenstain Bears universe. It is a weird interjection on the part of the narrator, though.
It's,
like,
it's dark. I read that and I'm like, is this a lesson? How many pint-sized swindlers are reading this book?
Right. Is this something that is like, true of real bears? Are we supposed to be learning this?
I don't think that's a bear fact at all.
Right, right, right. You're confusing me, book. You're confusing me, omniscient narrator. What is happening? But on BNN Live, we meet... This is the most weirdly specific, I can't tell if this is actually a pun or not name, I've ever encountered in these books. Christiane a man bear.
Well, I believe it's meant to be Christiane Amanpour.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh my God. Okay, wait a minute.
So wow. That made me want other ones. I wanted to see like Ann Barrison Coop Bear or Tom Brokaw or, and then I couldn't
think
of it.
So wait, they're doing, okay, that is the, because even I didn't even pick up on that, and I can't believe I didn't pick up on that. So that is the most, I wonder if she even, I'm going to have to tweet at her and just see like, did you know that there was a Berenstain Bear character loosely based on you and they had you just reporting on a paleontological dinosaur dig, like,
but also doing a good job, like asking the tough questions and doing her research, because she did bring up the fact that Ralph Ripoff had sold Sand Crab Jones a termite insurance policy.
Right. Okay, and that harkens back to the terrible talking termite, which is actually true. Ralph Ripoff did sell a bunch of bears. Fake insurance policies against termites. That's established lore.
Right. And he did overcharge for it, but I mean there is a market need for termite insurance because it's not covered by, you know, most homeowners policies, and probably not by bear tree owners policies.
There was a market need for termite insurance because Ralph Ripoff hired a termite to eat their homes. That is exactly what happened.
Okay, well that is creating a market.
Yep, he created his own market and he profited well from it.
Mm-hmm.
So Bear Country, as it says, is abuzz about the new find. They've discovered the dinosaur, and this is where Ferdy Factual gets in. We're at the Burger Bear, our favorite restaurant in Bear Country, and the Cubs are discussing this find. And that is when Ferdy arrives, and they make him an honorary bear detective. Now, what are your thoughts on Ferdy Factual?
I enjoyed Ferdy. He was also wearing the same exact outfit as his uncle, so mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I would go and watch his folk debut down in the East Village or something.
Ferdy is unusual in these books because. In the 90s, when he was created in the book The Berenstain Bears and the Nerdy Nephew. He was like the super nerd who moved to town. Now he comes across as just a know-it-all hipster, not even in an ironic way. Like, he is literally the personification of like the guy who dresses like he's from the 19th century, and is just he well actuallys everyone. He's a know-it-all. He has like no sense of humor about himself. He is just this, but he's not a nerd, like I think of it. He is just too cool for the room.
Right. He's very much, like, I mean, I appreciated his, I appreciated him actually, like, you know, solving the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, again, he got a little down on Fred. And I didn't feel like that was necessary.
Yeah.
He does, in fact, well actually. And my only note too was like, you know, they're talking about how so Ferdy gets to name the new species because, you know, the swindle is still afoot, and you know, Actual Factual is over the moon with this new discovery, and he's super excited, and Ferdy comes in to help him essentially seems to just be there to help name the new dinosaur species.
And what did they name the new dinosaur species?
Well, see, that's the thing. They name it Gigantosaurus Rex, so G-Rex, that's mm-hmm. the title of the book, G-Rex Bones. But I'm pretty sure that there's already still a Gigantosaurus.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. Now,
that's an actual dinosaur.
Yep, it was discovered in the early to mid-90s.
Right, predating this book, so I'm kind of like, well...
Now, what I do know is that Mike Berenstain, who illustrated a lot of these books, the son of Stan and Jan, was a huge dinosaur fanatic. And like since childhood, he was a dinosaur fanatic. And he wrote books on dinosaurs and illustrated books on dinosaurs. And I have to believe this book is in response to the Gigantosaurus like excitement. Because let's say it was published in 99, but let's say they were writing it earlier than that. Mm-hmm. And it was like really like 96, I think, 95, 96, like the Gigantosaurus really hit the popular imagination. And there was a lot going on with dinosaurs in the 90s, like with Jurassic Park and everything.
Right, so, right. And so, science advancing.
Yeah, I mean, the Gigantosaurus certainly wasn't twice the size of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. And it wasn't called Gigantosaurus Rex, but... I have to think that this book was a bit of a response, or at least trying to ride that wave.
Yeah, to capture, you know, kids' imaginations that were already probably pretty excited by new dinosaurs.
Right, right. Of course, it does come out. It does also put forward the idea that maybe everything you love is really a hoax.
Well, it does say that because it got to the end, and you know, and we know from the beginning that the Gigantosaurus is a hoax. And I thought, look, so are you questioning science right. on this one? Or like the paleontologist wrong?
Yeah, are you claiming it's like another Piltdown man? Like we are just a Barnum, P.T. Barnum type swindle?
Mm-hmm. that unicorn that they were trotting around in the late 80s.
Well, they enlist the aid of Papa Bear to take them to Dead Bear's Gulch and spy on the proceedings on the archaeological dig. And there's this whole weird Papa locks his keys in the red roadster. And
roadsters being the car of choice for detectives, because oh, yes. that's what Nancy Drew was always driving around in as well.
Oh yeah. what a wonderful coincidence. he locks his keys in the red roadster, so they get a lift. I mean, it's a whole chapter of that, but they get a lift with a tour bus that is being driven by Ralph Ripoff himself, and they get to see the actual archaeological site where the bones are being unearthed.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. and already Ralph Ripoff is already making a buck off of that, mm-hmm. and they get to have that up close look after wandering around the desert for a little bit. My only yeah. thought was just like, I hope you brought your compasses this time.
Yes, yes. And some water or something. Like it's
exactly. And I don't know if Papa Bear is always quite so dim.
He always is.
Okay.
He's always quite so dim. At least he blames himself. He blames him. He says, I'm so dumb or something. I guess I'm so dumb for locking the keys in the car. He's really down on himself.
Right, right. At first I thought that another cub said that. And I thought like, no, that's not okay. Like, yes, that was dumb. But
right.
But he's trying.
He says, your papa's a real dummy locking us out like that. And I'm like, aw, papa. I mean, you are, but yeah. But it's upon seeing the dinosaur bones that Ferdy starts getting his first inkling of doubt about this whole endeavor.
Right. He's just something isn't right. Like, you mm-hmm. know, he's looking at them from, you know, from his perspective. Sure, they look like dinosaur bones, but they're... He does make the point, like, you know, they're super clean, mm-hmm. and they don't appear to be that deep either. He doesn't mention that, but I'm helping Ferdy out a little bit.
They're right on the surface.
Exactly. So, he doesn't, they don't look like they've been in the ground for a long time, which is a very valid question, but he's still concerned. He still thinks there's something else wrong with it.
Right, because they say like something about cleaning them off, and it's like Ralph Ripoff's like, sand crab already cleaned off the bones, and because they look remarkably clean for bones that just came out mm-hmm. of the ground, but he's kind of holding his tongue, like he's not sure what it is about these bones that's bothering him, and it's the day of the unveiling that everything kind of comes out in the open.
And he did, like, he mentions that, like, he thinks about it for three nights, and that, you know, reminded me of the when the bear detectives first got involved. They're certainly playing a little bit of a long game here, because they don't rush into things, which makes them, I think, very sensible cub detectives.
Oh, yes. These are cub detectives who've busted up drug rings, who've stopped thefts. Who've stopped massive? I mean, they've stopped massive counterfeit rings in the town. Like they know their stuff. They know the game. They're not gonna point any fingers until they have all the evidence on the table.
Right, because then that lends, you know, that questions their credibility if they're wrong. So
exactly,
you know, good for you, Cubs. Still not Lizzie. She doesn't seem like she's pulling her weight.
No, she talks to animals though. We just don't get to see it in this book.
And then we do get, you know, another appearance from Fred, and we're told that Fred reads the dictionary for fun.
He does. That's pretty much all he's good for.
I think that's useful.
Yep.
Good for you, Fred.
Yeah, because we get this whole lecture from Ferdy Factual on what skepticism is. He's skeptical about these G-Rex bones, and he's like a good scientist, you know, like is skeptical, like looks for evidence, which is true. Like that's a scientist has to maintain this, like as they say, like scientists' job is to prove themselves wrong. But Actual Factual is so excited about these bones that he's not really listening to anyone who's calling attention to any flaws there may be in this whole skeleton endeavor. So the G-Rex is unveiled. It is enormous, terrifying, and this is the time where now Ralph Ripoff has brought a contract to sign, which is, how does the contract actually work?
Well, a contract, you know, I mean, he has the bill of sale.
Yeah.
So whoever owns the bones would be selling them to the museum.
Yeah.
So that appears to be Sand Crab, but I don't know that he owns that land. So
right.
I was a little fuzzy on that.
He is a hermit.
Right. Like he doesn't, you know, he has a shack. Like I don't necessarily think that he is the person that, you know, is meant to be selling the bones. I think they would be wrapped up in court for at least a little bit longer.
Right.
But, you know, Ralph Ripoff is acting as an agent for Sand Crab, and, you know, he just has the, here you go, you're selling, you sign it. Sand Crab draws a little picture of a crab.
Yes, because this is where we find out that Sand Crab, who also has no teeth, cannot read or write his own name.
Yep. I think it's sweet that he draws a picture of a crab, but it's an odd detail to include. And then Ralph Ripoff invites Actual Factual to sign as well as the buyer, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yes.
So an agreement of like, here, you know, like I agree to buy this for you for the price of, and what they finally settled on was $5 million, which originally Ralph was going on. Originally they said like, oh, you're going to sell it for $1 million. And then he asks for 20% of that. But still says he's getting $1 million. So I felt like his math was really fuzzy in the beginning, but you know, once it's clear that they are selling it for $5 million, I thought, okay, all right, that's fine. You'll get all the spats and striped jackets and straw hats you could possibly want.
But that's also the point where this stops being a minor crime.
Right. This will be breach of contract, and the breach of contract statute of limitations is actually a little bit more like 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
So I just don't think Ralph Ripoff has really, like, I mean, he's a small-time crook, and this is a big-time crime.
I mean, this is a man who usually is like playing three card Monty or like the cup and ball game on the side of the road. So,
right. So, you know, this is more in the vein of like, I mean, has he ever been involved in like art forgery or anything like that? Because this is more on that level.
Yeah, he has been involved in art forgery, actually.
Okay.
So that was a whole book about it.
So it appears like, you know, maybe he has some experience with this, but this is like, getting a little over his head.
Well, Ferdy Factual calls him out, says, "Don't sign it. Stop. Don't sign it." And he shows his uncle that it is a fake. It is false with a tape measure.
Mm-hmm. Because the G-Rex bones are only twice as thick, I think, as the yes. T-Rex's bones. By the laws of physics, according to Ferdy Factual, and probably regular physics too, I'm fuzzy on physics. A creature as big as the G-Rex is meant to be would need to have much, much bigger bones in order to, heft his bulk around.
Yes, and I like that they pointed that out, that the bones would have to be so thick it wouldn't even allow for internal organs. The bones would never support. And it is that thing where, like, if you're twice the size of something, you're going to need not twice the amount of bone structure. You're going to need an exponentially larger amount of bone structure. It's that whole thing of, like, animals can only get so large and still support their own weight because mm-hmm. it's just, well, like Ferdy says with a wave of his hand, it's physics. That's the way physics works. And
rather pointedly saying it to, reminding yep. his uncle, like, remember physics? You
remember
like
science?
It?
Remember science, Dr. Scientist? Speaking of Dr. Scientists, there's a doctor in the crowd named Dr. Rex Giant.
From Big Bear University,
from
yes.
Big Bear University, and he is wearing a phony mustache and a phony beard, and it is actually Zoltan.
Come to watch his swindle take shape.
Yep. And and according to Actual Factual, Zoltan was actually responsible for ruining an experiment.
Right. Which he didn't specify what the experiment was. So, I mean, honestly, it could have been related to the fruit flies and the apple, but...
Yeah. My experiment with eating an apple. How fast could I eat an apple? Never found out, thanks to his fruit flies.
This brilliant chemist. I mean, he's still pretty laudatory
yeah.
toward Zoltan Barish as well, because like he's like, oh yeah, no, you are very clearly a genius because you just tricked me, and like this G-Rex skeleton looks amazing if physically implausible. And then I really feel bad for Sand Crab Jones, who is essentially like, please don't send me to jail. I did it. Ralph Ripoff paid me. I needed the money. And there is really a through line for that termite insurance.
Yep. Yeah, they really because they come back to it. He got ripped off by the termite insurance.
Exactly. And like you get the sense, like, I'm assuming there has to be at some point be a Sand Crab Jones book where he, tries to put his life back together,
Right.
No longer trying to fight the termite, but joining together in trying to work together.
And here we have another example of this happens periodically throughout the book. So whenever Police Chief Bruno gets involved, Police Chief Bruno once again steps forward and eliminates the need for any kind of trial or hearing or, any kind of jury or anything. No need to get the judicial branch of the government involved in Bear Country. Police Chief Bruno, just by being a police chief, knows the law inside and out and decides that there's no way to arrest Ralph because there was never a sale made. Actual Factual never signed on the dotted line. That means there's no sale. That means there's no sale, so there's no fraud. Thus, there's no crime. Bear Country has anti-fraud laws, but no anti-almost fraud laws, to which I say, what?
Exactly. Because I'm pretty sure those are called intent to defraud laws.
Right.
And like if Bear Country has developed to the level that they have anti-fraud laws, I'm pretty sure they do have the intent to defraud. Like, attempted, like all of those
yes.
are things that like if you want me to buy that there's this elaborate structure of fraud laws in Bear Country, I I'm just going to need to see the entire Bear Country just legislative situation to figure it out. But, like, he does, and he's not even concerned about it. He's like, yep, oh, well, like,
yep.
Nothing we can do here. The law's hands are tied because we don't have these laws.
Well, they're like, well, let's see what the scientist has to say about this. And the scientist, actual, is like, he's absolutely right. There's nothing in the rule book that says that it's against the law to try to defraud someone. I'm like, what is even happening? Like, again, just take him to jail, book him, and then see what the courts have to say. Like, that is what happens in real life. You arrest someone for a crime, you book them, then the courts get involved and they can step in and say, you know what, this isn't a crime, or there's not enough evidence, or we'll let you go with a misdemeanor. But that's not for the chief of police to decide.
Right. Like, let's bring this to the grand bear jury. Like, right. That's what they should actually be doing.
Yep.
And I don't know if that factors into the whole, like, let's just keep things friendly, like,
right,
here in Bear Town. Or, you know, maybe maybe he does just have, you know, kind of jurisdiction in Bear Town, and he doesn't want, you know, he is concerned about the feds coming in and taking over the investigation.
Yes. Supporting my other theory that the Bear Country law enforcement is horrifically corrupt.
I was just about to say, I would really like to see these bear detectives take on, you know, corruption in the Bear Town Police Department.
Because there has to be a reason that Ralph Ripoff keeps getting not taken to jail. We do know for a fact that he was best friends with the mayor, so that's also something. The book
mayor
ends
with Honeypot. It's
Mayor Honeypot,
named after a classic trap.
That's true. Who fortunately does not have more than half a sentence line, because his dialogue in these books is irritating to the unlimited degree, because he speaks entirely in, like, malapropisms and screwing up the beginnings and endings of his words. And I'm so happy they did not print more than one half of a sentence of his speech, because he was irritating in the Saturday morning cartoon, and his character is 100 times as irritating in print. It just does not work.
I do appreciate that the book just says, yeah, once his boring speech was over and
yep,
they were all set. I was mildly sort of confused by, like, Sister makes that sort of comment about, you know, like, when Mayor Honeypot is like, we're gathered here today. And then they have this odd aside about, like, the actual factual and the G-Rex getting married.
Yeah.
And Brother's comment, I'm sure the professor has a very special feeling of affection for it. And I'm like, no. What? No. Stop that. No, Brother.
Man, don't even bring that up. Are you?
Brother's comment is, well, in a way they are. In no way. They're
yep,
not. Like, that's no. No,
that is
Brother.
Not what is happening in this room at all, Brother Bear.
You're a bear. You should be even closer to the birds and bees than
yep,
every other, you know, person that deals with this.
Actual Factual is very happy. That is the extent of his emotions.
Right. He is scientific excitement.
And then the book ends with the skeleton falling down under its own weight. And that's how it ends. Like, it just, the skeleton falls. It doesn't, miraculously doesn't kill anyone. And Actual Factual is left with this giant, useless rotunda, which he's saving for a giant T-Rex skeleton.
Right. Like, and the rotunda, like, he's looking for the T-Rex skeleton, but there's, like, no comment made really about, like, the danger of hubris for Actual Factual in building a giant rotunda before
right,
he has a skeleton that will fix it, that will fit into it. And so you're left with, like, and to this day, he is still looking for one.
He's
and
still
hoping.
This is a man whose museum has almost been shut down on several occasions by the board of directors for not pulling in enough money. And he's literally just letting an entire, like, wing of the museum sit empty in the hopes that one day he will discover a T-Rex skeleton.
Right. And it just doesn't seem realistic. And I'm not given any other idea of, like, what else is in the Bearsonian institution? Like, what, you know?
Everything.
What good things is he working
on? Everything is in there, and he is the only bear who works at the Bearsonian Institution. He is the curator. He is the ticket taker. He is the no one does anything except actual factual to run this entire museum. He makes all the decisions. He builds all the exhibits. And he goes out and does all the research for all the exhibits. So that's the Bearsonian.
Well, the board of directors. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
The board of directors should be glad that he's keeping the overhead so low by being
employee. he's an ideal museum employee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he has Ferdy there working for free, apparently. He seems to be like an intern or something.
Right, right. Yeah. He is your prototypical unpaid intern and disaster of nepotism. It's all he's doing is stroking this kid's ego every time he opens his mouth.
Right. I do want to see, you know, I appreciate that Ferdy was right about it. I would like to see him be proven wrong at some point, just to get some sort of, like, you know, just some humility in there.
Yeah, I don't know. He's also a great songwriter and lyricist. He has a girlfriend who writes songs with him. He's just like the perfect bear. What can you say?
That Ferdy. He's dreamy.
He's your masculine ideal. He's right there.
In his newsboy cap and his little round glasses. Mm.
His girlfriend Trudy Brunowitz, who also has little glasses. They're partners in crime. So that is the end of the book. Aaron, do you have any final thoughts on the Berenstain Bears and the G-Rex bones?
Final thoughts were I was really sad to see the G-Rex skeleton fall down, because there's one note that I made throughout the book was that all of the dinosaur drawings were so adorable.
Yes.
They looked just very dear and sweet and friendly. And I thought, like, well, you still have a giant, like, fake skeleton. Like, this is still a fun thing to come look at. I was a little sad about that.
Yeah. So for my perspective, I really liked this book. It's one of my favorite chapter books I've read recently. I thought that Raffish Rout or Ralph Ripoff came off really well in this book. They did a lot with his character. We met some more of his criminal cohorts. Every time they add more of these underworld characters, I just get tickled. I love the fact that there is a disgruntled scientist running around somewhere, just hating on. I love the fact that someone out there hates actual factual. I think that's great.
Ralph Ripoff notes, like, he's a wonderful person.
Yes, he's a wonderful guy. I thought the bear cubs themselves were a little underused. Their personalities didn't stand out like they usually do. I like the books where it's like preteens having preteen problems. Like, I also like the romance, teen trouble books that they get into. But overall, I would say the G-Rex Bones is a fairly solid book. It's available in ebook format. So if you're looking to pick up a copy, you can buy it pretty much wherever ebooks are sold. It has some really, like you said, it has some really fun illustrations of the dinosaurs and of the characters. So G-Rex Bones gets my thumbs up.
And mine too. It moves along pretty quickly. I think there's enough, like, you know, fun, silly stuff, particularly all the law stuff, that I actually thought, like, you know, if you were to read this with kids, like, adults could enjoy it too.
Yeah. So, Aaron, where can our listeners find you?
Oh, our listeners can find me on the internet. I have a podcast that reviews board games called Over the Tabletop. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're going to be coming back full steam in July, probably with a Gen Con preview, as we will be traveling out to Gen Con to attend and try some games and review some games. It is largely focused on two-player board games. And we can be found at Over the Tabletop on Twitter, Over the Tabletop on Facebook, and Over the Tabletop Podcast.libsyn.com.
Phenomenal. And everyone out there can find this show at berensteinbearcast.wordpress.com. You can find me on Twitter at bstainbearcast, or write to me at berensteinbearcast@gmail.com. Rate and review this show on iTunes if you'd be so kind. If you want to throw a couple bucks our way, you can go to patreon.com/deepinbearcountry and find us on there. Really appreciate that. And Aaron, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. It was so much fun. I had a really nice time.
I did too. And for everyone else out there, I will see you all next time deep in bear country.